from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Hello there.
More of the Abe TL Show.
You're every man's dream.
On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
The game, the Abe TL Show. Abe Gordon here in the Kia Studios, awaiting the start of the closing ceremonies for the Olympics. I'll be honest with you, I have no idea what goes on during the closing ceremonies. Like, I know we denote more flag bearers based on the performances at this game. Katie Ledecky is going to be one of them, along with a guy who rode. Congrats to him. I don't know how he gets selected. I know Tom Cruise is going to do something wonky, and so, sure. Do they parade again? Like, I have no idea. I don't know if I've ever watched a closing ceremony.
I've never watched a closing
ceremony. I always watch the opening ceremonies. Couldn't care less. It's over. Couldn't care less. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. It's going to be on, and I'm here for another hour. I guess I'll see what's going on.
We'll see.
I have no idea. That doesn't mean we don't have any other Olympics to talk about, though. There's a couple things that I wanted to get to earlier that I didn't. We've also got some discussions to have in the NFL. So let's go ahead and get to it. A segment I call Outside the Perimeter.
It may be the ATL show, but it's bigger than just Atlanta. It's time to go outside the perimeter.
Spanning the globe. Spanning the globe.
On the ATL show, Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
All right, so like the first thing I kind of want to talk about when it comes to the Olympics is the introduction of breakdancing as an Olympic sport. I had concerns when I found out what the format was to begin with. Those concerns were realized when I watched whatever that was. It doesn't feel like a sport, which is probably the biggest issue I have. It just doesn't feel like a sport. I don't think it's built for competition, but they tried to force their way into it. And I don't know, maybe my expectations were too high. It felt like they were like just some pretty good breakdancers. It didn't feel like they were so different that they are the best the world can offer. Maybe my expectations are too high for breakdancing in general. And then there was, like, the mid-30-year-old teacher from Australia, and it's just like, I'm supposed to keep a straight face? How do we not mock that? I mean, I get she's representing her country in the Olympics. It's an accomplishment the likes of which I will never come anywhere close to. But, like,
All I could,
that seemed like a mercy invite.
All I could think of, there's a scene in Bob's Burgers where, like, there's a white lady who's supposed to be teaching everyone how to hip-hop dance, and, like, every time she does something, she's like, that's what makes it hip-hop. That's all I could think of when I was looking at them.
It seemed like a mercy invite. Yes. Like, it really yes. did. But, and that, by the way, that would have made sense from a different country. Like, Australia should have enough breakdancers that we don't have to invite a 35-year-old teacher. Like, you remember, I'm not trying to mock, but you remember all those years ago, they had the African swimmer who and like that, that was part of like an outreach program to try and, and by the way, it kind of worked. Like they got a whole program there in, I think that was Equatorial Guinea, if I'm not mistaken. But like we all were like, okay, like they're doing this for the right reasons. Obviously he's not going to win gold, but they're doing it for this. Like with Australia, it was like that's not the right reason. What is that?
Australia, you all should be better.
Did she get hurt and she didn't want to tell anyone and she just, that was the limits of her moves? Anyways, it didn't work. Like it didn't work. And I know some people were excited about it when it first got there. If you enjoyed it, I'm sorry. It didn't work in the Olympics. And so we'll see if we ever have to deal with that again. A couple other things from the Olympics I did want to talk about. The Chinese and U.S. were tied for most gold medals, with the final additions of cycling and women's basketball. The U.S. pulled even with China, 40 gold medals each. And then the U.S. had many more bronze and silvers than pretty much anyone else. So U.S. was well out in front of everyone in terms of overall medals, tied with China for the gold medals. One of the questions I had is, like, how will I remember these games? Like, what stood out to me from these games? And I am biased, but I will say two things. That is probably the greatest track and field competition that we have ever seen. Like, literally every event delivered. I mean, especially on the track, every event delivered. I mean, the 5,000 and 10,000 men's and women's were both incredibly exciting. The 1500s, the 1800s, all of the sprints, the hurdle, like everything delivered. The high jump, which is American won silver, New Zealand won gold for men. I had to go to a jump off. The discus won by Valerie Allman. Everything delivered. Like, I don't know how else to put it. A lot of people will be like, yeah, of course it's the greatest track and field competition. It's the only one I've ever seen. Not for me. Like, I watch a lot. And compared to other Olympics, like, this one delivered. There's no doubt about that. And then the other thing, like, the last part of this for me is just LeBron and Steph and what they were able to accomplish with the basketball team. And LeBron wins Olympic MVP. Steph Curry joined him as part of the All-Star 5. Jokic, Wemby, and Dennis Schroeder were the other three. And that makes sense. Teams that made runs into the quarterfinals there, semifinals there, in terms of France and finals. But semis for Serbia, and Dennis Schroeder and Germany got knocked out a little bit earlier. Earlier today, the U.S. women's basketball team really had to fight and battle to hang on and find a way to win gold over France. And the question I have in regards to women's basketball moving forward is it ever going to be easy again? I think we looked at it and said this was theirs to lose, like way more than what we said with the men's. The men's should have won and did, but they were going to be challenged, and they were. And they've been challenged a couple of times over the course of the Olympics. Remember, they lost to France in 2021 in Tokyo in their opening game and then beat them in the finals to win gold. The women are 61-0 now, and they haven't lost since women's basketball was inserted into the Olympic competition. And you kind of ask, after barely hanging on a one-point win against France today, is the world going to catch up in women's basketball the way that it caught up in men's basketball? Maybe. I think one of the things that would definitely hold that back a little bit is that the WNBA is not necessarily as international a league as the NBA is. So you're still dealing with a lot of other countries made up of players in domestic leagues in Europe or in Asia not in the WNBA. And you do wonder how much that might hold them back a little bit. But, I mean, are we done with the days where it's a foregone conclusion that the U.S. women's team easily handles business? Because they, I would not say it was easy today, but they did handle business. So there you go. All right, a couple other things. The 49ers and Brandon Ayuk have re-engaged in contract discussions. And a couple of things probably happened here, right? At no point did the 49ers want to lose Brandon Ayuk, but they probably thought they were going to. So a couple things. Brandon Ayuk continues to turn down other teams' offers. It is not just about the money for him. He wants to go somewhere he can compete. If what is reported is accurate, he turned down $32 million per year from the Patriots, which would have been the highest, and that's the highest he's going to get anywhere. I mean, the Niners offered him $26 million midway through the offseason. He said no to that. 32 is a huge jump from 26. But that's not a team that's going to contend. And that's something that seems to be important to Brandon Ayuk. Yes, he wants money, but he's also not going to go to a bum team just to get it. And so we kind of circle it around, and it all leads us back to the same place. The best thing to do is just stay in San Francisco. And so I don't know how much they're going to up their offer from the $26 million it was midway through the offseason to now. All of this, quote, infighting and it looks bad, that's all gone. Like, once he's part of the team, that's all gone. It's all for show, but, like, there's no hard feelings from Ayuk, and there's no hard feelings from Shanahan. No hard feelings from Deebo Samuel or Christian McCaffrey. When everything gets settled, and if it gets settled with him staying in San Fran, it's going to be fine. Like, I had a buddy of mine on Discord the other day just calling him all sorts of names. And I'm like, I get your frustration. He kind of asked out, but, like, a couple of players in San Fran have asked out and then ultimately re-signed. Like, they did that with a kicker. They did that with Deebo Samuel. Like, yeah. Everyone's fine once it happened. Like, don't go throwing names on this guy, because there's probably still a pretty good chance he's going to be your receiver but when this all is said and done. And I think ultimately that's what happens. The biggest question for me with Ayuk and really San Francisco in general is, say, does bringing him back cost you Brock Purdy? Like, I don't know how they're going to have money to deal with Brock Purdy. And by the way, if I'm Brock Purdy, I don't need the $52 million or $55. Like, that's the other thing. If I'm Brock Purdy, I would be so happy to take, like, the Tom Brady, like, team-friendly $35 per. Like, one, I don't – obviously, Brock Purdy thinks he's the dude. I don't. I'm just like, I don't know, man. It's tough to tell in that offense.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, like, you were the seventh – you were the last pick of the seventh round. Like, we really need to break the bank. Again, I'm not taking money out of people's pockets, but, like, you'll be happy with $35 million.
Yeah,
I think you'll figure
exactly.
It out. Because that may be the only option. That may be the only option is not taking a huge deal. Because I don't know how they have money. I really don't know how the Niners have money. So there you go. That's pretty much going to cap it for the Olympics discussion for me. I've been as heavy into it as one can be over the past 16 days, especially over the past, like, 8 to 10 days once they got track going. I mean, it was a real problem with the phone and the alarm and staying up late or waking up early. So I am happy about that. I'm sure my dog is happy about that. She got the screen that's on at all hours of the night with the Olympics on. But I don't know. Maybe I'll come around. Paralympic Games only a couple weeks away, also in Paris. So maybe I'll come around. I got to find out. They're not going to do it on TV the way they did, but
yeah.
I do wonder if Peacock is. I wonder if they have Gold Zone for the. Like, that would be a better use of the Gold Zone for me than the actual Olympics. Because in the actual Olympics, there were, like, very specific events I wanted to watch, and so I wasn't really using Gold Zone a ton. If they're using Gold Zone for the Paralympic Games, I'd probably be on it. Just every day, just whenever I'm home, turn it on and let it cook. Yeah, so We'll see. We'll see if that's what they're doing. Closing ceremonies are underway. They're just about done in Paris, but we are not done here on the Abe TL Show. Not yet, because in about 5-6 minutes, Russell Clay, a fantasy guru, NFL columnist and insider, is going to join us. Get you all set. The best method to win your fantasy football draft and then, you know, to win your actual season. We're going to break it down and get some hints and tips from Russell Clay on the other side. You should not have held your fantasy draft yet. If you have, shame on you. And that's why I'm doing this now. I want to make sure we get all the best ideas and possibilities and previews before you have your draft. So Russell Clay is going to join us on the other side. It's Abe Gordon live in the Kia Studios. The Abe TL Show continues on the other side on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The weekend sports talk rolls on.
It's the ATL Show.
Yeah.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome in, 92.9 The Game, the ATL Show, live in the Kia Studios. The closing ceremonies at the Paris Olympics is underway. We'll get more into that at 3:40, answer a question we had earlier. But I do want to let you guys know the Braves game is also underway. And Austin Riley gave the Braves a 1-0 lead in the first inning. Spencer Schwellenbach now on the mound to try and make that 1-0 lead stand up in Coors. So it should be as straightforward as that. Want to go out to the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer, and bring in Russell Clay, a fantasy guru, NFL columnist, and insider. And I wanted to have Russell on to kind of get everyone prepared. If your league is organized and operated properly, you have not yet held your fantasy draft. And so I want to get in front of it and kind of give everyone a jump start, a lowdown on what the best ideas are for your draft. So, Russell, good afternoon. How are you today?
What's going on? Thanks for having me on.
All right, so let's figure out this for the first part. Not enough people check their own league settings. It's something that doesn't happen often enough. Too many people I talk to do not know if they're in a 4-point passing league or a 6-point passing league. And for touchdowns, for quarterbacks, how much does that differ? How much would you maybe change the values of a quarterback if they're in a 4-point per passing versus 6-point league?
It's a big difference. The other things like one quarterback versus the super flex thing where you can put a quarterback in your flex. But base settings, the two that are the base are the touchdowns passing and the passing yards. So the two things you want to look out for are, again, you said 4. Sometimes there's 5 points per touchdown. Sometimes there's 6. If there's 6, you're going to lean more towards pocket quarterbacks who are going to throw a lot of touchdowns. If it's 4, then guys like Jalen Hurts, who are going to get those rushing touchdowns, are going to be much more valuable than the classic pocket passers. I mean, that's true anyway, but it's even more true when you take away from the passing. And then the last thing for the settings, 20. So a point per 20 passing yards versus 25 passing yards, that's the main one you want to look out for. That's an extra point per 100 passing yards. So that's a big deal over the course of a season.
Russell Clay, a fantasy guru, joining us on the WadeFord.com hotline. Who's a guy that you feel in mock drafts, or if anyone's told you about their real drafts, that is being drafted too high, and then also one that's being drafted too low?
So in terms of too high, I don't know that I fully understand the Puka Nacua in round one thing. Of course, he had an amazing rookie season, and I have full faith in Sean McVay that he will create elite fantasy producers. But round one, that's too far for me. I can't do it. I look at guys like Garrett Wilson or Breece Hall or some of those other guys in the mid to late first round of drafts, and I can't pull the trigger on Puka there. And then in terms of guys I really like, Jackson Smith Najigba, it looks like he has a crowded depth chart, but I'm a big believer in, okay, this guy was a top pick. He was one of the best wide receiver prospects of the last decade. He was on a wide receiver depth chart at Ohio State with Garrett Wilson and all those amazing Ohio State wide receivers, and he was the best one. So I'm expecting a big, big jump from him in year two.
Russell Clay over here joining us on the WadeFord.com hotline, helping us prepare for fantasy drafts. And they're probably coming in the next week or two, hopefully not till after the third preseason game if your league is run properly, but not everyone's is. So we're getting you geared up and ready for it now. This is a question I'm interested to hear your answer in, Russell. If I told you you could have wide receiver one or RB1 in terms of end-of-season scoring, which one would you prefer that you had drafted?
We're in a different era now. I missed my 2000s where the first 10 picks of fantasy drafts were all running backs. That was when I came into fantasy football, so I do miss that era. However, we are in a position in the NFL where wide receivers and tight ends and all these other players, they're all starting to meld together positionally. So wide receivers are starting to look more like running backs. Tight ends are starting to look more like wide receivers. And there is less featured running backs in the NFL. We're seeing a lot of dual running back committees. So you have the Christian McCaffrey. So I'd rather have RB1, but the real question is RB2 through 10 versus wide receiver 2 through 10, I'd probably take almost all wide receivers other than Bijan. So It's a mess out there for running backs, but we're going to make it work.
I'm going to be honest with you, Russ. I've been a zero running back guy for years, now it's almost penalizing me because everyone's a zero running back guy. That I've actually
we all are, Abe. We all are now. We're forced to.
I've actually started to now go zero QB. And that's what leads me to my next question here, Russell, is what's the fall off at the top for quarterbacks in terms of, is it two quarterbacks? Is it three quarterbacks where if you can't take one of these top, however many guys, then you may as well wait until later in the draft and take QB 9, QB 10, et cetera.
So quarterback play was one of the main focuses of my off-season research this off-season and the past couple seasons. We're coming off the worst two-year stretch of quarterback play adjusted for, you know, NFL history, maybe of all time. We left an era where we had all those old quarterbacks retiring and we had a bunch of busts at quarterback, but we are replenished now. We're going to have a really good year at quarterback. So beyond the top five or six, that's really strong this year, the Hurts, Allen, Mahomes, Lamar, Jackson, et cetera, we're going to have some really great depth. I mean, you look at Caleb Williams in Chicago, he has the best weapons of number one overall pick ever. Keenan Allen, DJ Moore, Roma Dunze. So we also have Trevor Lawrence. We also have Justin Herbert. Those guys are going almost for free now. So Jared Goff, again, with that amazing Lions offense. So we're in a really good spot for quarterback play. We're going to see some big numbers this year.
And then, Russell, I got a series of questions here. We are in Atlanta, so I do want to address some of the players who are going to be there with the Falcons. Just kind of loosely talk about how you view their value, if you want to compare it to where they might rank in terms of running backs or receivers, or just generally think what sort of season they could have. Let's go one by one here. Let's start with the quarterback and your thoughts on the fantasy potential of Kirk Cousins.
I absolutely love it. I love Atlanta this year. I think their offense is going to be excellent. To be fair, I think if, you know, no shots at Desmond Ridder. We love the guy, Cincinnati legend. But this is going to be a pretty steep upgrade if Kirk Cousins is anything like we've seen in Minnesota. So he might, you know, he had Justin Jefferson in Minnesota, but I would argue he might have better weapons here with the Bijan Pitts-Drake London thing. So I'm very excited about that. And again, if worst comes to worst, they did make that Michael Penix pick. So, you know, they're pretty safe at quarterback as well. So I feel really good about it. I'm drafting Kirk Cousins again in that really late year, and I feel really good about it.
We'll talk about the skill players in just a moment, but you said something that got me thinking too. Sometimes you are so quarterback dependent on a player's value. Obviously, Justin Jefferson needs Kirk Cousins. Jamar Chase maybe needs Joe Burrow. Maybe that is a little bit of more of a reason to draft some of the guys here, because if you take Drake London, if you take Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, and something does happen to Kirk, maybe their value doesn't fall off because of Michael Penix. That's just something to think about. But let's go ahead and get into those skill position guys. Let's start with Kyle Pitts, because this is a guy that, you know, after his rookie season was in the discussion for tight end three, maybe. That obviously fell apart the last 2 years due to quarterback play, due to offensive game calling, due to injuries. But what are you thinking about Kyle Pitts making a return maybe into the top five, top six tight ends this year?
I'm heavily invested in Kyle Pitts' career. Him and Brock Bowers are the two best tight end prospects I've ever evaluated. And to have this go the way it has the last couple years, I'm on record of saying his rookie year was actually amazing. He, beyond Mike Ditka, he basically broke all the tight end rookie records. So he has a proven track record of being very good already. You know, Arthur Smith, we all joke. I think Arthur Smith's a great play caller, but the insistence on getting Jonnu involved last year was very frustrating for fantasy. And I know Pitts started last year with an injury. So I'm very high on Pitts. Again, he's going fifth, sixth round right now. I'll take him there just about every time. I am a fan. You know, we picked Atlanta. I've been in on this team all off season. So you're going to hear Rose. You're going to have me see rose colored glasses or whatever that saying is.
Russell Clay, a fantasy guru, NFL columnist and insider, joins us on the waitfor.com hotline. Just two more questions here as we continue with the Atlanta Falcons playmakers. And let's start with Bijan Robinson. This is a guy that seems to be a lock for the first round, maybe somewhere between 6 and 8 overall is kind of where it falls in most cases. Do you think that's probably accurate? And if so, is that a guy that maybe is one of the top 2 or 3 running backs fantasy-wise in the NFL this season?
You know, I started off this offseason, I got the opportunity to interview Brennan Marion, who was the wide receiver coach at Texas when Bijan was there. And he was joking with me that despite having Xavier Worthy, you know, who's a first-round pick this year, and a few other really good wide receivers, Bijan was the best wide receiver on the team. And in the new age of fantasy, you know, that's what sells here. And he is the guy. If we're going to have another guy at running back, it's going to be him. So I know it sounds like I'm irrationally hyping this up, but I've been high on Bijan since his Texas days. He's actually a Tucson guy, which is where I'm from in Arizona. So really, really special guy. Algier's a great backup, so that's an easy handcuff as well if you want to take care of that.
And then finally here, Russell's probably the most, I don't know if confusing is the right word, but a lot of ways you could go with it is your thoughts on Drake London. Look, we all think Kyle Pitts is going to be one of the top 5 or 6 tight ends in the league, or hopefully. We all think that Bijan can be one of the top 2 or 3. Drake London kind of falls into a different category. So how do you view the potential for Drake London this season now that Kirk Cousins and Zach Robinson are at the helm of this offense?
Drake London is a high floor play. I'm very confident he's going to get to 1,000 yards this year. What that looks like with Pitts and Bijan there, what's the ceiling? My lean is the ceiling goes towards Bijan and Pitts for fantasy numbers. But, you know, if anything happens to Pitts, we could see some 10, 12 target games for London here. So Kirk Cousins has always been a matchup guy. You know, we've seen games where he was targeting, you know, KJ Osborne a couple years ago, and, you know, all those secondary weapons for the Vikings. So he spreads it around pretty well and takes care of all of his top guys. But yeah, probably more of a high floor guy than when I look at a Garrett Wilson. I see a huge ceiling potential there. But, you know, really, really good player.
Absolutely understandable. Russell, I want to thank you for spending some time with us and hopefully getting some of the fantasy football community here in Atlanta prepped for their draft. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on.
There you go. Russell Clay of Fantasy Guru, the NFL and columnist and insider there. I have a problem with fantasy drafts. I have a problem as a fantasy football owner. I will tell you what that problem is on the other side, because even though I know it's a bad idea, I can't stop myself from doing it. Hence the struggles in fantasy the past couple of years. I'll tell you what that is on the other side. It's the Abe TL Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Back to Abe Gordon with the Abe TL Show.
Believe it. On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in 92.9 The Game. Final couple of minutes here. The Abe TL Show. We were talking fantasy football last segment, and hopefully that helped you guys out a little bit. I know many of us are kind of just stubborn in our drafting ways anyways, and yeah, we'll kind of go with what, you know, what is brought to us and what's out in front of us. But we also just make the same mistakes year after year after year because that's how we go. I'm almost always the last person in my league to draft a quarterback. I just don't risk too much concern. How can you take Lamar? Like, yeah, he might be QB1, but how can you draft Lamar and feel good about it with his injury past? Or Joe Burrow, same question. And so I wait, and then I start seeing dude after dude after dude come off the board, and I'm just like, all right, man, like, Dak Prescott's going to be, like, my quarterback in the 9th round. Like, who cares?
Yeah, you can typically wait for quarterbacks.
People always wait for quarterbacks.
Is crazy to me.
I used to go zero running back. I've now flipped that a little bit depending on situation just because, as Russell mentioned, there's so many two running back systems that if you can get
the
lead back.
Yeah.
In previous years, it was like Derrick Henry, Austin Eckler, Josh Jacobs, like the guys that didn't really, backups were not relevant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nick Chubb, stuff like that, you know. But even like Raheem Mostert has Achan, and you're like, I don't know, I'm going to draft the wrong one. But here's the mistake that I always make, and I'll do it again this year. I'll do it every single year. I have too many teams. And I don't even have like that many teams, but it's still too many teams.
Yeah, it gets to be a bit much.
And so I'll draft by setup, situation, position, whatever, like the first couple of picks. And then I'll just reach in every other draft to have as many of the same players as I had with the first team.
To make it easy for yourself.
I'm like, all right, I drafted Tyler Algier as a handcuff in one league. Looks like I'm drafting Tyler Algier to be a backup in 5 leagues now. And I'll do that for every backup quarterback, backup tight end. I'll do that all the time. And then the other thing I don't always do is I don't pay attention to bye week enough.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I'll be so happy that a guy's available and I can get him that I don't even look to see if he's got the same bye week. I normally will just bite the bullet and, like, just punt on a week in season. Like, it's like, you have 6 guys on bye. I was like, yeah, not winning this league. But, yeah, so that's my biggest, like, fantasy why-do-you-do-that-to-yourself thing is, like, drafting the same players on every team so I don't have to wonder which team a guy's on or root for a guy on one team but root against him in another league. I just try and draft everyone. So that's my thing. The Atlanta Braves are into the 3rd inning now. They still hold a 1-0 lead on that Austin Riley solo home run. So if we've seen anything at Coors Field the past 2 nights, it's going to take more than one run, but we'll see how that goes. I have an answer of what goes on at the closing ceremonies for the Olympics. I mentioned I don't think I've ever watched one of these things. I watched the opening ceremonies. I don't know if I've ever watched a closing ceremony. So here's what happened. Because I thought, for a while, it was just the flag bearers. So the flag bearers, the two for each country, some countries only had one, they do come out separate. But now the rest of Team USA is walking through right now. And the flag bearers for the United States, Katie Ledecky, obviously, and Nick Mead, who is a rower, first rower in American history to carry the flag. But now the rest of Team USA is walking out and doing their thing. So they do still have kind of a parade, if you will. This one is just in Stade de Paris, so it's not, they're not doing that whole big thing on the Seine and all that stuff. Real quick about the Olympics, like, the coolest fraternity to be in is to be able to tattoo the Olympic rings on you. Like, that is the dopest thing in the world. And it's, I love it because it's not just an American tradition. It's every country that, if you're allowed to mark your body, you know, some countries, religions, whatever. But, like, it's everyone. And you don't even have to, like, you don't have to have meddled to throw those rings on. It's, like, the coolest thing in the world. And obviously, I'm not going to ever be an Olympian. but that would have, like, I've always said I'm probably not ever going to get a tattoo. But, like, if I made the Olympics.
Got to. got to.
Like, it'd be the first thing I do after land. Like, you have, because you have to, you don't want to screw it up and not compete. Like, what happens if you got the rings tattooed and then, like, in the prelim heat, you false started? And then you're like, you're out of here, man. Like, that happened with a British runner earlier this year. Prelim heats, false started, get out of here. And you're like, what? That was it? Yeah, maybe four by one, something?
Nope.
I think I would do it after the Olympics. And then, like, if, again, this is all made up because I'm not going to the Olympics. But, like, then if I won a medal, I'd do something extra on top of it. Yeah. But, like, the fraternity of people who have the Olympic rings as a tattoo, and it's also interesting to see where. A lot of people might do, like, a smaller one on the shoulder. Some people do a big one on the back or chest. I just saw one person they zoomed in on just had a small one on their fingers, just on one finger. Like a very tiny one. It was pretty cool. So, I don't know. That's like just the coolest thing in the world. Like,
yeah. Yeah. That's a really nice badge of honor. It's dope. Like to be able to call yourself an Olympian and then like have that kind of be the, you know, the mark is cool.
Is there a performance so embarrassing that you're not proud to be an Olympian? Like like everyone in breaking? Is that where you're going to go with?
Yeah.
I saw an article written up earlier today on the last place finisher of the women's marathon, and like they were praising her for not quitting.
Mm-hmm.
And like also like she's probably an outstanding runner. Like it's like me running the marathon, be like I finished 2 hours after everyone else, but she probably did fine. And I'm like that made me think like. There's nothing to be ashamed of finishing last in the marathon. First off, it's running a marathon, which is crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's like the Olympics. And like, yeah, so you didn't win. That's fine. I'm trying to think like how bad a performance would have to be for it to be embarrassing. Like kind of the false start thing is probably the worst one.
Yeah, I was going to say something like that definitely. Or like when like you have some of the divers who go off and like just completely belly flop or like don't even like that stuff.
So funny. Yes. When a professional who you know is wildly, incredibly talented and they just it for whatever reason it falls apart, it is so funny.
Yes. Yes.
Like it is so funny. I saw one of the surfers had a score. So you get scored on two surfs in over the course of 30 minutes. Whatever your best two rides are get totaled up. Their whole it didn't add up to half a point.
Oh, man.
It was, it's about the waves and whether you get a good one or not. And they're at that time of day, like, they just didn't have good waves. And their whole score was like 0.48. You're like,
I mean, what am I supposed to
do? Welcome to the Olympics, man. Yeah. Like, I hope you enjoyed Tahiti. There are definitely like high jumpers who pole vaulters that don't clear like their first height. They're just three and out.
Mm-hmm.
That seems different than like a thrower who faults.
Yeah, that's different. Like, I guess it's different if, like, it's a technical
thing. It's different if you're a long jumper and you miss your footing and you step on the board and you fall.
Yeah.
But if you get to choose the height you start at and then don't clear it the first time.
Yeah, that's rough.
That's tough. It's. I mean, look, who am I to criticize, like, the world's greatest athletes? Like, I mean, you know what I mean? That Australian breakdancer gets to put the rings on her, man. The rings. She gets
to
tattoo the rings.
An Olympian. I could do that. I could do some of the dancing that I saw on that stage.
She gets the rings. She gets the rings, man. She gets the tattoo.
Right. She gets to call herself
an
Olympian.
And then she has to explain herself when people look up what she did. And she has to live with that for the rest of her life. Breaking should not be coming back. It really shouldn't.
I think I saw that it wasn't.
It's not like confirmed, and then like they'll have meetings and discussions, but like it needs to be gone, and hopefully the addition of baseball and softball will, because yikes, man, brutal. Still keeping an eye on the Atlanta Braves, and obviously we talked about this a little bit. Tough to kind of gauge Max Fried's effort yesterday. It is Coors Field; the numbers are going to be inflated, and if I'm going to credit the Braves' offense. As opposed to the environment at Coors Field for an 11-run blowout explosion and 5 the night before, if that's because the Braves' offense is clicking and not because it's Coors Field, I kind of got to grade Max Fried by the same thing and be like, you didn't have it. You weren't sharp. And if that's the case, that's the second straight time since his return where it hasn't looked like it needed to look. And so hopefully it was just Coors Field. But I also say that, and look, it's not like everyone, every time out at Coors Field is going to give up five runs. But I do say that as Spencer Schwellenbach is having a decent start thus far. You still got to get out, and you got to run around now, but still got to get out of it. But the Atlanta Braves are going to stay out west. They got a four-game series with the Giants and then three with the Angels. They then return home for three against the Phillies and three against the Washington Nationals. And obviously we talked about the Braves kind of falling off the pace in the NL wild card, if you will. And I want to take a quick grasp at the standings now. The Braves have got back into a wild card position. They are still the third wild card, and they are a half game above the Mets, 1.5 above the Giants. But the Padres and Diamondbacks, when the Braves had that little losing five-game losing streak, there's a little bit of space between where the Braves are in the third wild card spot and where the Padres and Diamondbacks are in the first and second wild card spot. So, look, it's going to be a battle, and the Braves are going to have to deal with the Mets. They got, the Giants coming up. They got the Angels coming up, who are also way down and out of it. So a couple of winnable games here. Look, the Rockies are the worst team in the National League right now. So another game you got to win today. You got to take this one home and hope to spin it into some winnable games against the Giants, who are not that far behind you. The Angels. And the Angels as well. So it's all right there for the Braves. Like it's just trying to find consistency. And it feels like anytime the Braves get consistent, it's consistently bad, not consistently good. And I'd like to see, look, we're not going to score 11 runs every game, but I'd like to see the five run output a lot more often than the one or zero run output. And that just hasn't been the case. So we'll see if maybe a little bit of juice from Coors Field will get into their water and they can carry that into the rest of this West Coast road trip. All right, that's going to do it for me here on the Abe TL Show. Going to be with Andy and Randy all week long, and then I am back next Sunday with another edition of the Abe TL Show. A lot of coverage at Flowery Branch this week, so keep it locked right here. We'll be here all week long. It's Abe Gordon signing off on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2 times points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.